imagine for a second that you are an Amazon seller.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
And you're bringing in, let's say, $400,000 a month in revenue.
Which is a pretty solid place to be, honestly.
Right. So if someone asks you what your business is worth, you probably have a very proud, you know, very specific number ready to go.
Definitely. You'd know your margins, your inventory, your profit, all of it.
Exactly. But then they ask a follow-up question. What happens if your top listing gets suspended tomorrow?
Yeah. And that question usually just hangs in the air. It's met with absolute silence.
Because it's terrifying, right?
It really is. The unfortunate reality for a purely Amazon-based business is that a suspension means your revenue just goes to zero overnight.
Wow.
Yeah, there is no backup generator. You're just offline.
It's a completely chilling scenario for a business owner. You realize you don't actually own a resilient business. You just own a fragile product listing.
Exactly.
And that gap between the proud valuation and that terrifying vulnerability, well, that's what we are focusing on today.
It's a really crucial topic.
It is. We're doing a deep dive into a fascinating 2026 playbook. It's titled, Why Building a Business on Shopify is the Most Important Step After Amazon.
Which is quite the statement.
Right. Our mission today is to uncover why expanding to an independent Shopify store is no longer just some, like, cute little side hustle for sellers making over $500,000.
Yeah, it's way past that now.
It really is. It's the defining move that separates a real company from a distribution agreement that Amazon could just, you know, alter or tear up at any moment.
It represents a really fundamental shift in strategy. For years, the prevailing advice was simply to optimize your Amazon listings.
Like tweaking search terms and stuff?
Pretty much. But for serious sellers playing at a high level, that bare minimum is no longer enough to guarantee survival, let alone secure long-term growth.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because whether you are actively building an e-commerce empire yourself, or you're just fascinated by the sheer mechanics of how modern online retail works, this matters.
It definitely affects literally everything we buy online.
So let's start by looking at the two playing fields, right? The walled garden of Amazon versus the open road of Shopify.
I like that framing.
We know relying solely on Amazon is an existential threat, but to understand the why behind that threat, we need to honestly dissect the trade-offs of both platforms.
Right. So let's look at the engine of Amazon first, because, I mean, we have to acknowledge its immense power.
Oh, absolutely.
The biggest draw, without a doubt, is the built-in shopper traffic. Specifically from Prime members.
They are so loyal.
They really are. Okay. When a shopper goes to Amazon, their credit card is already on file. Their shipping address is saved, and the trust is implicitly established.
So they just click buy.
Exactly. They convert into buyers at ridiculously high rates. For a seller, this provides incredibly fast product validation.
Because you can just test things quickly.
Right. You launch a new product, and you have real actionable purchase data within weeks.
Plus, I mean, you get access to FBA, fulfillment by Amazon.
Which is huge.
It is. They handle the warehousing, the picking, the packing, the shipping, and the inevitably messy returns process.
Trying to match that logistical scale as an independent operator would make you want to pull your hair out.
Seriously. The Prime badge is essentially a shortcut to buying buyer trust.
The shoppers arrive ready to buy, yes. But, you pay a steep toll for that privilege.
Here come the fees.
Yeah. Sellers face referral fees between 8 and 17% of the sale price. And that's heavily dependent on the product category.
And that's not even everything.
Right? Not at all. We have to remember, that fee is taken before you even factor in the FBA fulfillment and storage costs.
Wow. Let's talk about the cash flow bottleneck, too, because the payouts are notoriously delayed.
The DD plus 7 model.
Yeah, you're often waiting 7 days or more after the estimated delivery date. When you hit the Q4 holiday rush and your inventory costs are peaking, that delay is brutal.
It pushes your vital cash flow further and further out exactly when you need it the most.
It's just so stressful.
And beyond the financial strain, there is the glaring data issue. As an Amazon seller, you do not own the customer.
You're just renting them.
You are essentially renting them. You don't receive their email address or their phone number.
Which means no marketing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That means you cannot execute any real retention marketing or build a community around your brand.
That's rough.
Furthermore, you have absolutely zero control over how Amazon leverages your sales data.
Oh, this part is crazy.
It is. If your specific niche gets a little too popular, Amazon has historically been known to launch an Amazon Basics competitor.
Using your own data against you.
Informed by the very data your success generated.
It's wild when you step back and look at the control you give up. Which brings us to the alternative, Shopify.
Right, the open road.
On Shopify, the financial mechanics completely flip. You get next business day payouts in the U.S., giving you immediate access to your cash.
Which solves that key for a bottleneck.
Exactly. You have complete brand control over the aesthetic and the messaging, native social media integrations, and crucially, complete ownership of your customer data.
But there's always a catch.
Yep. The massive hurdle is traffic. You have to generate every single click yourself.
It doesn't just happen magically.
No. The playbook notes it takes a grueling 6 to 12 month ramp up period just to gain traction. It demands heavy creative and marketing production.
It's a lot of work.
It makes me think selling on Amazon is kind of like renting a premium kiosk in the world's busiest mall.
That's a great way to put it.
You get all the foot traffic in the world pouring past you, but the mall dictates your signage, they tell you what hours to operate, and they keep the customer list.
And they can kick you out.
Right. Shopify, on the other hand, is like building your own massive, beautiful flagship store out in the middle of the desert.
I love that analogy.
You own the building, you own the land, but you have to pour the concrete and build the highways yourself just to get anyone to pull up to the front door.
That analogy captures the dynamic perfectly. The central takeaway from the playbook is that the ultimate goal isn't to choose the mall kiosk or the desert store.
It's not an either-or situation.
Exactly. The most resilient strategy for these high-revenue sellers is to harness the massive immediate cash flow generated by the busy mall kiosk and use it to fund the construction of that desert highway.
So you pair them to balance the weaknesses of each.
Precise.
So we've established the structural difference between the kiosk and the desert store. But I mean, moving traffic away from Amazon sounds incredibly expensive and time-consuming.
It is a serious investment.
How does this transition actually change the financial reality of the business? Like, does the balance sheet really improve enough to justify all this effort?
It absolutely does. And the playbook outlines four specific mechanisms that shift the financial reality.
Okay, let's hear it.
The first is customer ownership, which we touched on. On Amazon, a purchase is just a one-time transaction.
Yeah.
On Shopify, every buyer becomes a permanent lead in your database.
Mm-hmm.
Owning that relationship is the only mechanism to unlock retention marketing.
So you can keep going back to them.
Right. When you have their email and SMS, you can drive repeat purchases for basically free, expanding their lifetime value.
It makes sense.
Without that data, you are perpetually paying algorithms to acquire new customers over and over again.
And that gets expensive. That structural shift feeds directly into the second mechanism, which is business valuation, right?
Yes. And what's fascinating here is how the broader financial market prices risk.
How do you mean?
Aggregators and private equity firms literally pay higher earnings multiples for hybrid brands.
So businesses doing both.
Meaning businesses that prove they can generate direct-to-consumer revenue on Shopify alongside their Amazon revenue.
Because the risk profile is diversified. If an Amazon policy unexpectedly shifts or, like, a competitor files a frivolous complaint that temporarily takes down your listing, your Shopify revenue doesn't evaporate.
Exactly. Sophisticated buyers price that stability and predictability directly into the multiple they use to value your company.
Wow, that's huge.
By diversifying your revenue channels, you are actively multiplying the overarching financial worth of your business.
Okay, so that's two.
The third mechanism is the Amazon brand referral bonus, and the fourth is the cash flow advantage, specifically those next-day settlements on Shopify that free up your working capital.
Okay, wait. I have to stop you on this brand referral bonus concept.
I figured you might.
The playbook mentions that if you drive Shopify marketing traffic to Amazon using specific attribution links, Amazon actually gives you a portion of your referral fees back.
They do, yes.
I'm trying to look at this from a skeptical seller's perspective. Isn't that just feeding the beast?
It seems like it, right?
Yeah. Why would I spend my own hard-earned ad dollars to send a customer to Amazon where I still have to pay fees instead of my own Shopify store where I keep 100% of the margin?
Yeah. It certainly sounds counterintuitive at first glance. But it's actually a strategic win once you understand the mechanics of Amazon attribution.
Okay, explain that to me.
Amazon aggressively wants to pull outside traffic into their ecosystem. So, when you run an ad on Meta or TikTok, you use a special Amazon attribution link.
Just a specific URL.
Right. If a customer clicks that ad and eventually buys your product on Amazon, Amazon recognizes that you brought that user to their platform.
And they reward you.
As a reward, they issue a rebate on those 8 to 17% referral fees.
Let me make sure I understand. If I know a customer prefers the speed and trust of Prime shipping, they might abandon my unknown Shopify store anyway.
Precisely. Instead of losing the sale entirely because they don't trust your new website yet, you give them the Amazon option.
So you still get the sale.
You secure the sale. Your Amazon organic ranking gets a massive boost because the algorithm loves external traffic, and Amazon hands you a chunk of your fees back as a thank you.
That is wild.
The tragedy is that countless sellers miss out on this revenue simply because they never bothered to set up the attribution tracking.
That is an incredibly clever loophole to subsidize your ad spend. Okay, the financial incentives are massive, but you can't just snap your fingers and have a fully functioning flagship store.
Definitely not.
If I have a highly profitable Amazon operation, how do I actually build this out without ruining my current business in the process? The playbook details a very strict 12-week timeline.
The timeline is strict because the sequence of execution matters just as much as the tasks themselves.
Makes sense.
It's broken into four distinct phases. Weeks 1 to 4 focus on the foundation. This involves selecting your Shopify architecture, locking in your domain, and installing the core foundational apps.
Like what kind of apps?
Your email marketing software, your reviews engine, and setting up Google Analytics 4. You are basically laying the concrete.
Getting the plumbing installed. So by week 4, I have the domain and the basic store online. Can I just start running ads and driving traffic?
Absolutely not.
No.
Driving traffic to an unpolished site is a guaranteed way to burn cash. That leads into weeks 4 to 8, which focus entirely on content and design.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. The playbook points out a massive specific mistake sellers make at this exact stage.
Oh, yes. The copy-paste trap.
Right. They simply copy and paste their Amazon listings directly onto their new Shopify store. Why does that fail so spectacularly?
It fails because the psychology of the buyer is entirely different depending on where they are.
How so?
Think about the user journey. An Amazon buyer is transactional and intent-driven. They go to the search bar, type in stainless steel garlic press, and they intend to buy one right then.
Right. They know what they want.
The product copy simply needs to confirm the technical specs and dimensions. But a Shopify buyer, they were mindlessly scrolling TikTok or Instagram.
They weren't shopping at all.
Exactly. Your ad interrupted them. When they arrive at your site, they need emotional, educational storytelling to build trust from scratch.
So that makes total sense.
If you greet them with a wall of bulleted product specs, they will bounce off the page instantly. Different environment, different job to be done, different words required.
You have to court a social media buyer, whereas the Amazon buyer is already at the altar.
That's a perfect way to phrase it.
So weeks 4 to 8 are for rewriting that copy to be emotional and investing in lifestyle photography.
Which seamlessly transitions into weeks 6 to 10, the trust and conversion layer.
Okay, what happens here?
This overlap with the design phase is deliberate. While you're finalizing the aesthetics, you must seed the store with existing reviews. You cannot launch an empty store.
No one wants to be the first customer.
Right. This is also when you implement clear security badges, articulate a transparent return policy, and publish a compelling founder story.
And finally, weeks 8 to 12, integration and pixels.
The final plumbing.
Syncing your Amazon catalog so inventory matches up, installing the tracking pixels from Meta and TikTok so the ad platforms know who is actually buying, and setting up those Amazon attribution links we discussed earlier.
Crucial steps.
Pushing the store live before the trust elements or the tracking are ready is like the number one reason these builds fail.
The tracking pixels are the intelligence of your marketing. If you launch without them, you are flying blind.
Which brings us to a really dangerous operational trap the playbook highlights.
Yeah.
The cannibalization trap.
Yes. You have to be very careful here.
There are two golden rules for protecting your Amazon sales while you build this new channel. First, never price match.
Never.
A seller might be tempted to sell a product for less on Shopify because they aren't paying Amazon's hefty fees.
Which seems logical at first.
But if Amazon detects that your product is cheaper elsewhere online, they punish you by removing your buy box eligibility.
And for anyone unfamiliar, losing the buy box means you literally lose the add to cart button on your own Amazon listing.
It is an absolute death sentence for sales.
It is catastrophic. Furthermore, artificially lowering your Shopify price trains your most loyal customers to abandon the channel that still drives the vast majority of your revenue.
It's like opening a premium restaurant right next door to your own fast food franchise, but selling the exact same burger for $2 less.
Exactly.
You aren't winning new customers, you're just stealing revenue from your own drive-thru.
A terrible strategy.
The second rule to avoid this trap is adjusting your product strategy. You keep your standard single items on Amazon, but on Shopify, you sell higher average order value bundles, subscription models, or exclusive limited editions.
You provide a unique, compelling reason to shop on your independent site without ever competing on the price of your core commodity product.
Okay, so we've got a beautifully designed store, we've avoided cannibalizing our pricing, and we have customized emotional copy.
We're in good shape.
But that entire operation will just collapse under its own weight if the technical plumbing isn't robust enough to handle the actual day-to-day operations.
Very true.
Let's dig into the tech stack and what it means to build long-term brand equity. The playbook mentions a lot of tools, but how do they actually solve the seller's problems?
Let's focus on the mechanics of catalog management first.
Okay.
If you are managing under 100 SKUs, and a SKU, or stock keeping unit, is simply a unique identifier for each specific product variation you sell. Shopify Marketplace Connect is the standard tool.
What does it do?
It acts as a bridge. It automatically syncs your listings, orders, and most importantly, your inventory levels between Amazon and Shopify.
So you don't oversell.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It ensures you never accidentally sell product on Shopify that you just ran out of in your Amazon warehouse.
And for fulfillment, obviously a seller doing $400,000 a month isn't packing boxes in their garage anymore.
No, definitely not. Most established sellers start by leveraging Amazon Multi-Channel Fulfillment, known as MCF.
How does that work?
It's a service where Amazon uses your existing FBA inventory to pick, pack, and ship your independent Shopify orders.
Oh, that's handy.
It's highly convenient for a launch. However, as the brand scales and desires more control over the customer experience, they often migrate to native Shopify third-party logistics providers.
Then you made software for collecting reviews and an email engine like Klaviyo.
Yes, which leads perfectly into this broader concept of brand equity.
Right. The playbook defines true equity off Amazon as assets that compound in value over time. First, an owned audience.
This is a huge one.
The playbook makes a crucial distinction here. A highly engaged email list of 50,000 people with a 15% open rate violently outperforms a stale list of 200,000 people with a 5% open rate.
Quality over quantity, always.
Second, a compounding content library. Third, independent reviews hosted on your own domain.
And the fourth asset is the ultimate indicator of success.
Oh.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the absolute metric of brand defensibility is direct search demand.
Meaning people actively bypassing Amazon, opening Google, and typing your specific brand name into the search bar.
Precisely. When your branded search volume grows consistently month over month, you have successfully built a real brand in the minds of consumers.
They know who you are.
Right. If that search volume remains flat for a year, despite high Amazon sales, you do not have a brand. You merely have a product that sells when placed in front of foot traffic.
Yeah.
That is a fundamentally different and far more vulnerable type of business.
I want to circle back to something incredibly specific regarding that owned audience.
Sure.
The playbook states that skipping automated email flows leaves 30 to 40% of potential revenue on the table.
It's a massive number.
I read that and had to do a double take. How does a simple welcome email or an abandoned cart email mathematically account for that massive of a difference on day one?
It comes back to the psychological nature of the social media traffic we discussed earlier.
The interruption marketing.
Exactly. Because their intent to purchase is so low, the vast majority, often over 95% of visitors, will not buy on their first visit.
That's a lot of window shoppers.
Right. Imagine a scenario. Someone clicks your TikTok ad, puts a product in their cart, but then their kid starts crying or they get a phone call and they close the app.
Happens all the time.
Software like Klaviyo acts as a digital net. It automatically triggers an abandoned cart email 30 minutes later, pulling their attention back to finish the checkout.
Oh, I see.
If you don't have those automated nets in place, all the money you spent to get that initial click is just poured down the drain.
Wow.
That 30 to 40% figure represents all the easily distracted people who simply needed one more automated nudge.
That paints a very clear picture. Okay, you have the store, the pricing strategy, the tech stack, and the digital email nets installed.
Those little pieces are there.
But as the playbook bluntly warns, without a dedicated traffic engine, you just have a beautiful, dead website.
Sad, but true.
You've built the glorious flagship store in the desert, but nobody knows it exists. How do you actually get eyes on the product?
Well, in 2026, the traffic engine relies on a very specific three-tiered funnel: TikTok, Meta, and Google.
Okay, let's break those down.
They each perform a distinct function. TikTok ads and TikTok shop act as your prospectors at the top of the funnel.
Finding new people.
Right. They offer lower CPMs, meaning it costs less to reach 1,000 viewers, which makes it highly efficient for introducing your brand to completely new customers.
But there's a catch, right?
Always. The algorithm demands a massive, relentless volume of native short-form video.
You can't just upload a static image of your product and expect it to work.
Not a chance. Mm. Then you utilize Meta, Facebook, and Instagram for mid-funnel retargeting.
Okay.
The CPMs are noticeably higher, meaning the ad space is more expensive. But your conversion rates hold strong because you are only showing these ads to people who already saw your video on TikTok.
The brand recognition is there.
Exactly. Hmm. Finally, Google search and shopping sit at the bottom of the funnel. This provides the highest return on ad spend for established brands because you are capturing existing intent.
Because they're already looking for it.
Right. If a user searches premium noise-canceling headphones, they are ready to swipe their credit card. You just pay to ensure your link is at the very top of the results.
But implementing this brings us to what the playbook calls the creative reality check.
This is a tough one for a lot of people.
And this is where so many seasoned Amazon sellers stumble hard. To effectively scale this paid social trifecta, you need to produce 8 to 15 fresh video creatives per active ad account every single month.
It's a huge workload. And this raises an important question.
Yeah.
How does a seller who has spent years completely accustomed to Amazon spoon-feeding them ready-to-buy traffic mentally pivot to essentially running their own media production house?
It's a massive shock to the system. You transition from tweaking a few bullet points of text to managing lighting, sourcing actors, writing scripts, editing footage, and chasing TikTok trends.
It's a completely different job.
Sellers often get frustrated and blame the ad platform. They say, oh, Facebook ads just don't work for my specific product.
When in reality, they're just experiencing creative fatigue.
Right. They ran the exact same video for 3 straight weeks. The audience became blind to it, and the algorithm just stopped pushing it.
It requires an entirely different operational skill set than ranking an Amazon listing.
So, what does this all mean? It means this high barrier to entry, the grind of producing 15 quality videos a month, is exactly why successful sellers rarely attempt to do it themselves.
It's just too much for one person.
They hire specialized digital marketing agencies to manage that creative pipeline because the ultimate trap is treating your new Shopify store like a 5-hour-a-week side project.
You get out what you put in.
If you invest 5 hours a week, you will inevitably get 5-hour-a-week results. It has to be funded and resourced like a completely new business because structurally, it is one.
It absolutely is. And the companies that recognize that reality and resource the transition properly are the ones that fundamentally transform their risk profile.
Which brings us to the bottom line for today's deep dive. Expanding to Shopify isn't about abandoning Amazon.
Not at all. Amazon remains an incredible engine for cash flow and discovery.
This transition is about sleeping well at night. It's about knowing your entire livelihood, your mortgage, and your payroll aren't tethered to one random algorithm update or a competitor filing a fake hijacker complaint against your primary listing.
It's about taking back control.
The playbook gives a bold projection. Sellers who invest in building this independent Shopify engine today will see 10 to 100 times the branded search volume by 2029 compared to those who refuse to adapt.
It's a staggering competitive advantage. But consider this final thought, especially as we look toward the evolution of e-commerce.
Okay, lay it on us.
As AI search assistants and social commerce continue to mature over the next decade, will the Amazon-only business model even be able to exist?
Oh, wow.
If an AI is doing the shopping for a consumer, it is going to look for authoritative independent brands with the footprint across the entire web. Will the concept of just selling a standalone product without an independent, recognizable brand attached to it become entirely obsolete?
Oh, man. That is a heavy structural question to leave us on. If your entire business identity is just a barcode sitting in an Amazon warehouse, how does an AI even know to recommend you over the million other barcodes?
Exactly.
You have to build the road in the desert, or eventually you just won't exist. Well, that is all we have time for today. Thank you so much for joining us on this exploration. Next time you're shopping online, take a second to notice whether you're buying from a real brand's flagship store or if you're just stopping by a very busy, very fragile kiosk in the mall. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.